You're listening to the Swim Out Podcast, a show about the wonderful world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, Hunter.
Hello, Vicky.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of the Swim Out Podcast, where today we'll be talking all about the big one.
We meet Gareth, the man who conquered Wales with his breaststroke.
This fantasy, this ambition, this ridiculous dream that I'd had 3 or 4 years ago was actually happening.
Hunter pulls back the kimono of the man behind Wowzer.
They had guns on the boat in order to shoot the shark.
And we meet the record holder for the longest ever channel swim.
Oh, I think it's the adventure, the travelling. It's such fun. It's better than sitting at home knitting, isn't it?
Plus you, our lovely listeners, tell us your stories.
Quick reminder to you all to give us some likes, some feedback, please, on your podcast provider app. It all really helps us find more listeners, meet more swimmers, and just, yeah, grow as a podcast. So self-promotion aside, Vicky, tell me about what you've been up to since we last got together.
Well, I haven't been swimming much. This has been quite frustrating. I fell over and I tore my bicep, which, let me tell you, is very painful. And I had some quite extraordinary bruises, which at one point actually looked like a jellyfish sting. But it wasn't a jellyfish sting. Yeah, it's super painful.
So sort of butterfly, I imagine, is completely out of the question at the moment.
Well, front crawl has been out of bounds, and butterfly, I fear, will remain out of bounds. So, yeah.
A sort of doggy paddle for now, is it?
Actually, breaststroke really hurts. Front crawl is actually coming along all right in the sort of small steps that I'm allowed to take. I'm now allowed to swim for 20 minutes.
Wishing you a speedy recovery in that case.
Thank you. And now I hear you have been winning awards.
Yeah, well, actually, last week I had a pretty amazing night at the BFI Cinema for the Audio UK kind of radio awards, where I was pretty shocked to win gold for best new radio producer, which was, I was pretty gobsmacked, to be honest.
It's fantastic.
And I had to make a speech, which I hadn't prepared anything for in front of several hundred people. Yeah, it's obviously someone's kind of listening to the bits of radio that I'm putting out there that we're making and Swim Out and some of the other projects that I've got in the background, really. So
we also met up, didn't we, at the weekend. We went to our swimming club Christmas party, which
which I should explain is obviously why I no longer have a voice 4 days later, and I'm still kind of feeling quite husky.
I seem to remember that I just went around telling lots of people how much I loved them.
Yeah, no, flying form, like a sort of a little elf going around saying how much you love them. It was great to see. Well, anyway,
we've also got
with the show.
We've got a new logo as well.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
So Johnny Voss, my friend, drew us some lovely little swimmers for a new logo. So that's up and running now.
Yeah, thank you very much, Johnny. Much appreciated. So on with the show. Vicky got out and about in person this week, going round the corner to her favourite swimming spot.
So I'm here at West Reservoir with Gareth Jones, who's a regular swimmer here at my favourite training spot. So you've been a presenter of TV shows about science and cars for many decades, and also you've got a really popular podcast, Gareth Jones on Speed, about cars and motorsport. You've got 17 series,
yep.
And you're rarely out of the iTunes top 10. Wow, amazing. Croeso,
welcome.
Croeso,
yes, well done. Thank you. Gosh, you caught me out there. I wasn't expecting to hear my home language in Stoke Newington. How wonderful.
So you're now known as the man who swam across Wales, and you've made a series of documentaries called Nofio Adre.
That's right.
Swimming Home, about the swims, which will be broadcast on S4C. So have you always been into swimming, Gareth?
Yeah, I've always considered myself a swimmer, if you like. I was never much of a runner as a kid. I'm flat-footed, so I think I'm well adapted to swimming. I'm basically a frog from the waist down, I suppose. When I approached my 60th birthday, I mean, this was, I was 60 in July of this year, but it's about 3 or 4 years ago, I could sense this huge marker approaching. wanted to celebrate it in a fantastic way. And rather than just have a big party and get drunk like I did for all my other big parties, I thought I'll do something that has a bit of a shelf life, something that not only extends the period of celebration, but gives me something to look back on. That's what I did when I was 60. And so I decided to swim across my home country, Wales, from South Wales to North Wales, like a salmon swimming upstream back to my spawning ground. I'm from North Wales originally, you see. So yeah, I put this project together, inspired by the Burt Lancaster movie, The Swimmer, which I saw as a kid. Didn't really understand as a kid, where Burt Lancaster, people know this movie, he's at a party in Connecticut, a pool party, and he looks and he can see all his neighbours' swimming pools, because of course everyone's got swimming pools in this part of the States, and he can see this sort of path of swimming pools. He thinks, oh, there's my home, I could swim home across all these pools. So I thought I'd do that on the bastard scale, you know, and try and create this series of stepping stones in reverse across Wales, where instead of staying on the dry bits, you just go in the wet bits. And created this hit list of some 30 bodies of water, Wales' greatest hits, the biggest, the deepest, the coldest, the most daunting, the most dramatic. I thought, I'll try and swim across those. So I realised I wasn't going to be able to do this without assistance. And that would be expensive. If I was going to have to pay for a safety crew to travel with me, I couldn't do this. But having researched all these bodies of waters, I realised that each one had a magnificent story attached to it as well. I thought, oh my God, there's a TV series in this. Like anything, I make up my mind to do something before I know whether I can do it or not. And even at the very day we started this challenge of swimming 60 kilometres across some Herculean bodies of water from South Wales to North Wales, I didn't know if I could do it. I thought, well, that's a good premise for a TV programme, because if you know the outcome of a sports event, you're not going to watch it. And so combined with will he or won't he do it? My gosh, he's 60. How is he going to do this? Why is this ex-children's television presenter doing something so far out of the area he normally does? And the content of the stories of each of the bodies of water, I knew that I had a very rich thing to offer the broadcast medium. And then all I had to do was be physically strong enough to do it. So that's where this glorious place, the West Reservoir in Stoke Newington, came into its own. I was able to come here and train and train hard. I think I only swam 6 kilometres twice here before the challenge started. And I knew that the largest body of water I would have to cross in Wales, still body of water, was going to be Llyn Tegid. And that's 6K. And I've known that lake my whole life. So if I knew I could swim to cross that lake, I could cross any body of water in Wales. So the theory was I could do it, but I still didn't know if it was possible for an old sod like me to be able to swim on a daily basis and push myself almost to the point of exhaustion.
So what was the most fun part of the journey?
Wow, good question. Fun? I'm not sure if any of it was fun. I mean that. I remember the very first day in Porthcawl in the sea off South Wales, where I saw the whole team, including the safety team and the film production team, for the first time. And I realised in an hour I was going to be thrown off a boat a kilometre off the coast of South Wales and have to swim to the land and then continue swimming. And I filled up with tears. I could barely talk. I was so emotional. Like this, getting emotional thinking about it now. This fantasy, this ambition, this ridiculous dream that I'd had 3 or 4 years ago was actually happening. There's no doubt that when I crossed the line at the end in Conwy in North Wales, having swum from one extreme of Wales to the other, I was expecting to be tearful again, be crying. But I wasn't. I was overjoyed. I was euphoric in a way that I haven't ever been in my life. I felt like I'd won a gold medal in the Olympics or something. And I was... So that was arguably the funnest, the most joyful moment, crossing the line. There was a certain extreme pleasure of having crossed Thin Tegid, the big one, and also being the first person ever to have swum across the Clairwen Reservoir in the Ellen Valley in Mid Wales, which, if you've ever seen, these are monsters, you know, 150 feet deep, this incredible Victorian dam wall, which is daunting, and the water is deep and dark and cold and black. To find myself the only person in the middle of this reservoir, okay, apart from the safety boat, but waving the boat away, no, go away, leave me for a minute, I just want to enjoy this, and just slowing down, coming off the pace I was swimming at, and just sort of lauding myself in it. That was a huge privilege, is more than anything, I think.
I too am going to do a swim to mark my 60th year, which is next year. And you talk a bit about ridiculous things.
Yeah.
Are these swims ridiculous, or do you think they're actually the most sensible reaction to our inevitable ageing?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. They appear a ridiculous idea, particularly for someone who's never done an endurance challenge before. You become invisible when you're 60, don't you? You're not one of the movers and shakers anymore. There is no denying, having done it myself now, that you can reboot yourself. And I've reshaped my body. I have muscles in my shoulders now like I haven't had since I was a roadie in my 20s. It is a ridiculous idea that a 60-year-old person could be fitter than when they were 40. That's the ridiculous thing. But it's possible. You don't have to, you know, go and swim 60 kilometres across Wales. You can just go to the pool and swim another few lengths beyond what you thought you were capable of. If you just keep going that little bit further, you enter into a new zone. I'm an athlete now, maybe not professionally, but the way in which I tackle what I do has turned me into an athlete. Imagine that, a 60-year-old man who's never been a sportsman in his life becoming an athlete. So I hope the same thing happens for you. What's the nature of your challenge? What are you doing?
So my dad, on his 50th birthday, rowed a little boat from Bristol to Bath.
Oh.
So my plan is to swim back.
Oh.
So it's about 15 miles.
Up the River Avon?
Well, yeah, down actually.
Down the
down
with the stream, with the with of course.
Flow.
Go girl.
Yes, I'm really excited.
Yeah. It's the way ahead, and if you don't want to ever get older than 60, start swimming now.
Yeah. The programme is glorious with breathtaking scenery, and you may need the subtitles as Gareth Jones, Nofio Adre, which means swimming home, is in Welsh.
You can catch the programme on S4C Cymru, which you should be able to access worldwide. All details are on our website. Next, it was my great pleasure catching up with Stephen Muñetones last week down the line from his home in Huntington Beach, California.
Stephen's accomplishments are truly formidable, both in and out of the water. Not only a champion distance swimmer, Stephen has notched up unprecedented swims around the world, but he's also the go-to person in global open water swimming.
He coined the Ocean 7 Challenge. He's an author, commentator, and the former US open water team coach. Stephen has dedicated himself to the sport and galvanised its wider success. As the founder of Wowza, the World Open Water Swimming Association, he has mobilised people and resources for over a decade and professionalised the sport around the globe. Stephen, welcome to the Swim Out podcast.
Ah, thank you. It's my honour to be here.
You've had an extremely long and dedicated career surrounding water. Could you just tell me about what your earliest memories were of the water and how, you know, you progressed into more serious open water territory?
So I've literally been around the water all my life. I started swimming on a competitive swim team, or learning how to be a competitive swimmer, when I was 4. I joined a swim club in my teens. That coach, Penny Lee Dean, who set the world record in the Catalina Channel and English Channel in 1976 and 1978. And so my coach was one of the foremost swimmers, coaches, administrators in the world. I mean, I literally learned from the best, from Olympic pool coaches to the Olympic or the English Channel record holders. And I just absorbed everything that they took. But there was something that these coaches didn't either have time for or didn't have interest in. And that was telling the story of everybody else that was in the sport. And whether you cross the English Channel in 7 hours or 14 hours or 21 hours, these are all heroes. And I believe every single one of their stories is worth telling.
In your own swimming, when did you kind of make the mental leap? When did you kind of get off the normal track of swimming and actually start to kind of contemplate slightly more kind of crazy, adventurous swims, sort of the sorts that hadn't really been charted before?
Fortunately for me, because I live in the city right next to Lynn Cox. My mentor was Penny Dean. I live in the same city as Greta Anderson, who did a lot of channel swimming in the 1950s and 60s. So I was surrounded by eclectic, eccentric people. So I was surrounded by people who always thought outside the box, always extended themselves beyond what everybody thought possible. So I never thought it was unusual. I mean, when I first started, I remember, you know, they had guns, they had rifles on the boat in order to shoot the shark. They had people that would be at the end of Catalina in their cars with their lights on, because the swimmer in the boat would be just swim toward the light, swim toward the light. There was no GPS, there were no tech suits, there were no even silicone earplugs or you know, fancy swim caps. It was just like, put on the goggles, put on the suit, and go. I mean, feed once an hour. If you don't want to feed once an hour, feed every 2 hours or 3 hours. So it was really raw there. And that rawness was the only thing I knew.
So did you ever develop a kind of a mantra or a kind of, was there a philosophy or words that would return to you?
Penny Dean, who really taught me most about what I know about open water swimming, she always had two goals in mind. One, just to finish the swim. You know, whatever you do, finish the swim. And second, swim fast. And third, if you can, set a record. Second and third are secondary, but the first, finish, was very, very important. Now, it sounds easy. Walk in, swim across, walk out, you finish. However, Penny and Lynn Cox and others of that era really delved into preparation. Yes, walk in, swim across, walk out. But behind that, you know, if you look behind the kimono, I mean, it is unbelievable the training that people did way back then. There was no textbook. There was no formula. There were no websites to tell you. The information wasn't there. And when the information wasn't there, then you had to, I would say, out-prepare. You really had to extend yourself.
I mean, a huge career highlight for you must have been coaching the U.S. national team. What was it like making that kind of transition or progression, you know, to that level? I mean, do you look back at that as just sort of the most amazing part of your life, or was it really like a lot of pressure that you were dealing with?
It was an honor. Anytime you are able to represent your country as an administrator, as a coach, as a referee, as an athlete is a true honor. I think everybody has a great patriotic feeling. And because of that patriotism, you want to succeed. You want to do your best. As a coach, you need to tell the athlete, hey, you know, in a competitive environment, what are the tendencies of other athletes? What are the tendencies of their competitors? Do they breathe to the right? Do they breathe to the left? Do they negative split by a significant margin? How fast is their closing speed? All of this information you need to share with the athletes so then they can process that information during the race.
On a slightly different tack, I've been amazed just, you know, reading about you and researching how much of a kind of model of athleticism you are. And I was so shocked to read that a little over 5 years ago you experienced a heart attack that sounded extremely traumatic. Your 17-year-old son helped save your life. I mean, how's that affected your life consequently?
I would say profoundly. I woke up in the hospital several days later. I was in a coma, in induced coma. And when I woke up, the cardiologist came over, explained to me what had happened. It was frankly very difficult for me to understand what happened. 2 days before I had the heart attack, I had no memory. I've had EEGs where they measure your brain waves, and I do have a portion of my brain which is completely vacant. Subsequent to having the heart attack, there was a period where oxygen wasn't getting to me. My son literally saved me with CPR, but there is a section of my brain that is cognitively zero. There's nothing there. Fortunately, it's not something that I know that's happening. But when he told me, I was frankly very upset at myself. I was saying, how could I let this happen to me? And I need to make up for lost time. I need to be more appreciative of people around me, family, friends, even people who, serve me at a restaurant. I need to work harder, not necessarily longer, but I need to make sure that what I do is meaningful.
Are you still actively swimming?
Yeah, in fact, during COVID, I really got back into open water swimming. I mean, there was all the pools in California, like many places, were shut down. And I had been out personally of the sport for a long time. I was always swimming, but I wasn't personally doing ocean swimming. And I got into it. I realized how much I loved it, much more than pool swimming. Right now, the water temperature in Southern California is 14, 15 degrees Celsius. A little cool for me, but if I keep a 6 feet kick up and a high turnover, I'll be okay.
My last question is, where do you see the future of the sport in 10 years' time?
The trajectory of open water swimming is incredible. You've got the slow swimmers who eat cake after a swim. You've got the serious channel swimmers, who do single and double crossings. You've got the racers, who swim in stuff like the great swims. You've got the cold water people, serious hardcore winter swimmers and ice swimmers. All of those interconnections are going to be exponentially increased over the next 10 years. Now, I hope that a sport like ice swimming gets to be included in the Winter Olympics. So have the ice kilometer at the Winter Olympics. I am very hopeful that in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics, we can have a point-to-point swim in the Pacific Ocean. That would be great. We're going to see people swim in really, really interesting places around the world. We have high-altitude swims, swims that it takes a long time to get to. I mean, Easter Island, all these islands around the world, nobody's yet swum to. We talk about the last frontier. I mean, it's really the ocean that's the last frontier. There are so many uncharted waters out there. World records can be set over and over and over again because there is so much of the world that has not yet been swum. Yeah, our sport is going to increase and get more and more interconnected over the next 10 years for sure.
So thanks, Stephen, for giving us a massive shout out on the Wowzer website and spotlighting us as podcast of the week. That was really great. Thank you.
So, Vicky, as it's December, I noticed that we have some facts and stats. So for anyone who uses Spotify to listen to our podcast, we have our Spotify Unwrapped. I will do the grand reveal. Apparently, we had a lot of firsts this year. We are really big in Austria.
Wow, that's good.
Next up, we have 6 fans listen to our podcast on New Year's Day this year.
Apparently. Whoa.
Yeah, so if you're one of the special fans, do write in, and I'm sure we can potentially try and spotlight you in the next series. So a big thank you for the day one fans. And, a little bit about the sort of the demographic of our fans. So most of our fans listen to us between 11 and 5pm, apparently, in the day.
So we're daytime listening.
We're daytime listeners, yeah. Kind of people somewhere between 11s and kind of tea time. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's it for our 2021 Spotify Unwrapped. Thank you very much. In other news, we have been watching in awe as swimmers crossed the channel last year and this year, including Chloe McArdle taking the Queen of the Channel trophy. But it's not all plain sailing. With the added difficulties of COVID and the ever temperamental weather, it's worth remembering that you can't take anything for granted in this sport. Via the internet from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Vicky caught up with a very special listener.
So you are, Rick, our favourite fan, and you were set to go for the Channel swim this year, the big solo, which especially during COVID, it is such a massive undertaking. If you could just tell the listeners about your preparation for the swim.
Sure. I prepared and trained for 4 years with a local trainer named Gary Bruce, who's from the UK. We did it remotely, but we're always in touch by FaceTime and so forth. He would send me workouts each week, and I'd do them and file a written report on Sundays with him. Did some events like Alcatraz and so forth, and an unsanctioned ice mile, that type of thing. And then as this year rolled around, got more serious, I went to English Channel Swimming Camp, Vaughan Ridge, run by Tracy Clark in Dover. In June, had to quarantine for a week at the Purple Palace there in Dover, and take tests and so forth. Be at the Premier Inn before I got loose and was able to actually go to camp, and then trained between camp and the actual trip to Dover in San Francisco once every month. And so I was ready and raring to go when I got to Dover, and that was in September.
So what happened?
Got there on a Wednesday and found out on Friday that the pilot was ready to go at about 3:30 in the morning on Sunday morning. And so I got geared up. My trainer came over Saturday. We packed up and went to bed about, ate a lot of pasta, went to bed about 6 o'clock in the evening. He said there'd be a final go, no-go call with the pilot. And if he'd wake me up, and if it was about 7:30, it'd be bad news. But if it was about midnight or 1, we were all set to go. So I went to sleep and slept like a baby because I was really ready. He came in and woke me up, and I looked, and it was 7:30, and I was so sad. And the pilot had said that the winds were really picking up, especially towards the French side of the channel, and it was just going to be prohibitive, like 30 or 40 mile an hour winds on the second part of the solo. And so we'd have to wait. And as it turns out, that was as close as we got.
Oh, I mean, it's called the Dover Coaster. You know, it is so, so hard. And you said afterwards in one of your blogs, you said, "So it's over. I'm officially involuntary retired and my heart is broken." So where are you at now? Because it's a few months later.
I decided to take at least a month off, which is actually stretched into about a month and a half because we have our Thanksgiving holiday here, which is a lot of heavy eating, and see if my shoulder would heal up a little bit, how my hip felt. I've been getting cortisone shots in both just to kind of keep going and make it to Dover. And I've, since I trained and watched what I ate for 4 years, I allowed myself to just eat whatever I wanted. So I've gained a decent amount of weight in a short amount of time. And the shoulder is really not feeling better. So I'm probably going to have an MRI on that and have it looked at. I'll probably get back in the pool, I think, this Saturday. I've been kind of looking forward to it. It's been a long time. The last swim I had was my last day in Dover with my trainer just for fun. You know, I won't lie, it's kind of been a downer, and I've been in the dumps a little bit lately, and I think finding a new routine will help with that.
And what's your plan? Do you plan to try again, do you think, right now?
It's been a wonderful journey, but I'm just going to have to reluctantly call it a retirement at this point. Just I'll swim recreationally as long as I can for the rest of my life.
Rick Cipolla sharing the omnipresent difficulties of long-distance swimming, and in particular the channel. We wish you well, Rick.
get in touch with the Swim Out Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If there ever was a need for inspiration, our next guest delivers in bucket loads, which is exactly where she started her swimming life. Vicky caught up with her in her home in Kent.
I'm here in person with Jackie Cobell, who I first spied on the beach in Dover in 2019, where you regularly hang out during the season. Mm. You tell funny stories, doing a little bit of swimming. And it was there that I discovered that you were the record holder for the longest channel crossing at 28 hours and 44 minutes. Yes. An incredibly impressive, if maybe slightly undesirable, feat. So you were also declared an honour swimmer in 2020 in the Ice Swimming Hall of Fame and listed as one of the 50 most impressive open water women swimmers in 2015. Ooh. By the World Open Water Swimming Association. Yes. Wowzer.
Yes.
Your list of incredible and iconic swims is way too long to list here. So welcome to Swim Out, Jackie.
Oh, thank you, Vicky.
So let's start with the big one then, the English Channel record. So the swim started on July the 24th, 2010.
Yes.
How long did you think it would take?
Well, I'd done Lake Windermere and that took me just over 8 hours. So I thought, well, you know, sort of because it's double, say 16 hours with the tides, 18 to 20 hours. So it was a bit over that, I'm afraid.
So tell us what happened in the swim.
Well, as I say, I set off and I remember saying to my pilot, well, you know, you're in for the long haul, and he had a chuckle, you know, but obviously I didn't realise it would take that long. I mean, I didn't know that I'd taken that long, you know, but I knew something was up because I was just looking at these orange lights and they just didn't move, you know, and I thought, oh, that's strange. But anyway, I didn't like to dwell on it and just put my head down and kept swimming, really.
What made you want to swim the channel?
I've always loved the water. Ever since I was a little girl, I was fascinated by it. And to keep quiet, my mum used to stick me in a bucket of water. And we used to spend weekends down Canberra. And my family just let me get on with it. I mean, I'd run down to the beach and the tide would take me out. I couldn't even see the coast. And then me bring back in again. So, yeah, I mean, I loved it. And then when I was approaching 50, I thought, what can I do? And I've always heard about these channel swimmers. And when I found out that you didn't have to be an athlete, I thought, well, I'm going to have a bash at that, you know. And I was really surprised when I went down to Dover Beach and there were all sorts there, you know. I mean, I thought they'd all be like all slim and muscly and, you know, looking like Adonis. And they weren't really, they were just like me. So, I started training and loved every minute of it.
So once you'd got the record for the longest channel swimming feat, which is so impressive, you then took up ice swimming.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, after my channel swim, I know it sounds ridiculous, but everything went flat. You built up, you know, to the swim for years and years and the training, and then, you know, a couple of weeks after, you think, oh, what can I do now, you know? And I thought, well, I didn't get cold when I was swimming the channel, and I thought, oh, I've heard about this ice swimming malarkey. So I thought, well, I'll set my goals towards, you know, swimming in Europe and places like that where there was lots of ice.
So you got your first ice mile in 2012 in Holbrook Lake.
Holbrook Lake, yes. Yeah.
So then, having kind of got a few ice mile swims under your belt, you then went and swam the Bering Strait. 65 swimmers,
yes,
in a relay, swimming from Russia to Alaska.
Yes.
And there were only two of you from the UK. How did you get selected for that?
I mean, ice swimming had just sort of taken off. And I was the first person in the UK to swim an ice mile. And I suppose I was on their books. So, I made some inquiries. I said, oh, yeah, you know, we're looking for, you know, ice swimmers. And it was just such an iconic adventure, really. It was just totally amazing.
I've watched the little video about it. I mean, how did you talk to the other swimmers and...
Well, you know what? There was this just rapport. You didn't have to talk. You knew what they were thinking, you know, just by the looks on their faces. You know, it was just complete camaraderie, you know, when we was all pals and best mates. It was fantastic, you know, and we got on so well.
The next notable swim. Yeah. There's a two-person relay from Argentina to the Falkland Islands.
Yeah.
Matthias Ola.
Yes.
And you won a World Open Water Swimming Performance of the Year award for that.
Did I?
Oh, yes.
I'm getting to that age now and I can't remember half of what I've done.
So how did you come up with that amazing idea?
Well, I met Matthias on the first Bering Strait swim, you know. And, he's a really nice guy. And he got in contact with me. And, you know, the sort of troubles between, you know, Argentina and Britain. He said, why don't we have a swim of peace and harmony. Wow, that'd be great, you know. So, I went over there and we swam between the two islands and that was fantastic as well, you know. It wasn't a very long swim, but, again, it was an iconic swim. But, that was a bit of an adventure in Argentina. As we were swimming, there's all these bombers overhead and I don't know if they like the idea, actually.
So Steve Monotones from Wowzer said of you that you're always smiling, always helping, always inspirational. Nothing that you do is easy, whether it's swimming across channels, working on dry land, or challenging in the ice. I don't know how this incredible woman does it all. You're a special human being.
Oh, that's really nice of him.
But what drives you to keep swimming, Jackie?
I really don't know. I think it's the adventure, the travelling, and one of the big things is, you know, meeting up with all the other ice swimmers, you know. It's such fun. It's better than sitting at home knitting, isn't it? I must admit, I like to give something back. I mean, when I first started training, you know, the swimmers on the beach were so nice and kind to me. So if anybody wants to swim the channel, you know, I like to be there for them, you know. Kath Pendleton, I was on her boat. She's the first ever girl that swam in Antarctica and done the ice mile.
Yeah, we've had her on the show,
so
actually.
I gave her some advice. Don't look up. Don't say, oh, we're nearly there yet. So she was very good. Head down all the way.
Which swim are you the most proud of?
I suppose I'm proud of my channel swim in as much as I'd done it. I had so many people that said, oh, no, you're not going to do that, you know. And in fact, I'm one of these people that if someone says to me, you can't do that, I'll bloody well show them. And I said to my dad, I'm going to swim the channel. Oh, no, you're not, you know. I said, I am, Dad, I am. It's one of these, is it that older generation that no matter what you've done, he was never pleased with anything, you know. So he said, no, you're not. You're too, he said, you're too old, fat and ugly. What's that got to do with, I don't know. But he said, I'll tell you what, he says, I'll bet you £1,000. I said, all right, Dad, you're on. And he turned round and he bent down and patted his backside and said, my money's safe. And every time that got really bad out there, I thought, I've got to show that bugger. You know, so really, he kept me going.
So I just wanted to ask you as well, just about, you did that really funny advert for the co-op. An advert for ice cream.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So tell the listeners about that advert, because it really made me laugh.
We'd done it in Walpole Bay, and we couldn't believe the setup. There was like all these big Winnebagoes there, and this is your Winnebago, you know, and we had our own makeup girls, and so basically we had to wear these horrible swimming caps and have all this sound system under them, and we had these earplugs in, these ear things in, and they were talking to us directly, you know, but they said nothing was rehearsed. We just had to ad lib about being in there saying, oh, we know the water's no lovely, and this, oh, I can't wait to get out of ice cream and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that was just, it was just amazing, really.
Thank you very much for coming on Swim Out.
Oh, thank you. As I say, I'm not a fantastic swimmer, you know. My technique's terrible, somehow I get from A to B, you know.
So you've just got a Guinness World Record, a World Record, and an Ice World Record.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie Cobell, the ever-shrinking violet.
I think that's it from us this series. Is it time for a pint now?
Jesus, I think it is time. Well, before we say goodbye, I think a huge thanks are in order. First, we'd like to thank Chaz Hamilton, our mentor.
Guest presenters Omi Dale and Fiona McDonald. And also Mikey Tees for not only guest presenting, but also his beautiful announcements.
Johnny Voss and Laura Salisbury for designing our podcast artwork. And finally, we would like to thank all our guests and contributors who have inspired us over the whole series. We'll be back next year with Series 3.
In the meantime, swim out and swim safe. Goodbye. Bye.